Welcome to The Cockatoo, your source for all things Australian music in the US of A. We're coming at you from Los Angeles, California, and this is the interview part of our newsletter where we talk about musical journeys to the United States. Today, I'm very excited to be speaking to Kate Cuthbertson. Kate manages a performer known as FKJ, short for French Kiwi Juice, known to his family and friends as Vincent Fenton. Kate's journey with Vincent has seen him headline the Blue Ribbon venues around the world, as well as festivals including multiple Coachellas, Lollapalooza, and many more. Today we're going to find out how this lady from Adelaide got herself here. Welcome, Kate.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great to see you. And let's just give a little orientation for our listeners as to who FKJ is. I know of him as a multi-genre, multi-instrumental musical savant would be my best description. Yeah, but tell us the elevator summary of who he is and kind of music that he performs.
I mean, funnily enough, even having managed him for as long as I have, I still struggle to pigeonhole him into any particular sound or genre because, as you said, like he crosses all of that and sort of defies any ordinary sound and how to do things. So he's from France. So I think a lot of like French house was initially like a big inspiration for him. But I feel like FKJ really introduced, you know, looping sounds and instruments, multi-instruments live to the music world in a sort of newer way when the industry really started changing with SoundCloud into streaming. I feel like he was sort of at the forefront of doing that live in his bedroom as sort of a bedroom producer. So, and now he does it on, you know, the world's biggest stages, still how he used to do it.
Right. So he's French, but also a Kiwi. He's from New Zealand as well, right?
Yeah. His dad's New Zealand. His mum's French.
Right. And he's released two full-length studio albums, 2017 French Kiwi Juice and 2022 Vincent, both sort of self-titled?
Yeah, both self-titled, yeah.
Basically, and lives in the Philippines?
He does.
Right.
Yeah, and undisclosed area. He likes to keep that quite private, but yeah, he lives out in the Philippines. It's beautiful.
Okay, we won't disclose any secrets. And you've worked with him throughout the period of his two studio releases, yeah?
Yeah, I came on board as management when he released his first album. So it was a bit of a crossover there, but we met at the end of 2016 and started working together from the beginning of 2017 and all through his second album release. But in between that, obviously that was a pretty big gap between 2017 and 2022 album releases, but he released a lot of incredible bodies of work, like EPs, both from like just instrumental piano to another EP called Ylang Ylang in that time as well.
Yeah, very busy, prolific artist. Excellent. Well, let's talk about you. So you grew up in Adelaide, right?
I did. Good old Adelaide.
Right, good old Adelaide. And you're currently based in Los Angeles?
I am.
So when did you make the move from Australia to the United States?
I initially started coming out here, and by here I just mean the US. I was based in New York at the time, at the beginning of 2016. So I did a little stint and then I came back again just on my ESTA for 3 months to see how I liked it. And then I moved at the end of that year more permanently. So yeah, I was in New York for 2.5 years. And then at the end of 2018, I moved to LA. But I've been touring a lot in all of those years, actually. So it's nice to sort of be a little bit more grounded now.
So tell us about that period, that period when you were sort of had one foot in Adelaide and one foot in the United States. How did you manage that personally?
With a lot of difficulty, to be honest. I mean, it was exciting because, you know, I was in my early sort of mid-20s and I was still working full-time hospitality work in Australia and Adelaide whenever I could to earn money to float what I was doing overseas. At the time, I was managing 4 Australian bands as well, again, completely independently. So I was trying to do that. I came over to the US in order to get them to that sort of next level as well as myself, because I knew that there was more to the world than just the Australian music industry, and I was really curious about what that was.
And how did you end up getting into music management in the first place, in Adelaide?
In Adelaide specifically, I had lived in London for 2 and a bit years when I was 18. And that's when I first got into the music world, or when I first learned that the music industry existed and learned that management was a thing. So then when I moved back to Australia, I started interning at this company called 5-4 Entertainment. I'm not sure if that's still their name, but I'm quite sure they're still operating more as an event company now. But I did a management internship with them because they managed TK Meidzer at the time and another artist called Jesse Davidson and a few other great acts. So I did a 6-month internship there.
And then, so you do your 6-month internship and then you decide it's time to start very young at this point, I might say, becoming a manager yourself rather than sort of nestling into a pre-existing organization. You elect to go for it, right?
Well, I would like to say that that was my train of thought, but it was more so because I really struggled to get a job. I would have loved to just nestle in and get a job back then. That's what I wanted. That was the dream. But I had dropped out of high school at quite a young age. So I feel like, you know, this was 10 years ago or so. And I feel like it's changed a lot since then. I feel like, you know, the importance of academia was still a little bit stronger than maybe it is now with the internet and how much it's changed in the last 10 years. So yeah, I really struggled to get a job. So I just sort of said, well, fuck it. I guess I'll just go straight to the artists and see what happens.
Yeah. Create a job for yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you're in your 20s, you're living in Adelaide, you're managing 4 bands, and you come to the realization that you need to expand their horizons and possibly your own. And the US is a obvious starting point and also a major reason why we have these conversations. I think that's the point of what we're doing here. How does that look, those initial trips? Where are you going? What are you doing? What's happening?
Good question. I honestly, thinking back on it now, I'm like, who was that person? But I just used any contacts I had. So, I mean, at the time, from the bands I was managing in Adelaide, a couple of people had reached out about one of those acts. So I was managing a duo, electronic duo called Pine. So we're still going strong. I think they're actually playing in LA, potentially at the Echo. Let me double check that, in February. So it's great to see them still doing their thing.
Absolutely.
And yeah, there was a couple of managers that reached out to me called John and James. And funnily enough, they're still some of my absolutely closest, nearest and dearest friends. And they introduced me to a whole lot of people. They really believed in me. They helped me with my visa letters. So a lot of my initial trips were meeting with them, speaking with them. And also that's sort of why I fell in love with America. Everyone's really encouraging. You know, I was a starry-eyed, very inexperienced manager from Australia. And I said, you know, I've come out here and I'd go to meetings or parties and say, oh, I'm an artist manager. And people were really excited and encouraging. And that's something I never found. Maybe I just wasn't in the right circles, but I struggled to find that same emotion around it as in Australia.
What are the significant doors and opportunities that they opened up for you that made the United States seem like a viable option for you?
Honestly, as simple as encouragement. It didn't take much. It just took people saying, you can do it. Let's go. Like, come over. Let's try. So initially we had ideas of starting our own management company, which we didn't end up doing. They still had full-time jobs. John was at Universal at the time and James was over at Red Light at the time. And then everything sort of got rolling with FKJ for me, and which honestly took up the best part of 7 years of my attention.
Okay. So in that early period where you haven't moved to the United States, you're not a resident yet, but you're spending a lot of time here, check it out. John and James are helping you out, more of a New York focus. How did you manage that? You're working in hospitality in Adelaide, saving money, I guess. Like, give us an understanding of how that was even possible.
So I had saved up just from working hospitality, and to be honest, it wasn't. I had $500 Australian in my bank account when I moved to New York. I had my first month's rent paid, and if I didn't get a job within that first 4 weeks, I had to leave. It was as simple as that. And that's when I somewhat harassed FKJ until they offered me tour manager. And then within 2 months of tour management, I took over for management as well.
Okay, so that is a wild 3 months. You arrive in New York with $500, a couple of good mates, but nothing else. You got 1 month of what they would call runway in the startup world. And 3 months later, you're managing FKJ.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny when you put it like that, but yeah. And then for a long time, I honestly lived off of, because, you know, when you're managing an artist, that you want to put everything you've got into their show and take as little as you can and do whatever it takes to help them make money and help these shows function. I was kind of just living off on the road. So I wasn't paying rent anywhere for quite a while. I was eating off of the rider or per diems for income or for food. It wasn't glamorous. Let's just say that.
Right. Yeah. No, the road's only glamorous when you're not actually on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So just peg that in time. When is that 3 month period taking place?
So that brings us to June 2017.
So you slam bang in the middle of the summer season here. Tours are happening everywhere. And you're basically living on the road and surviving on per diems. And
yeah, we started the tour in March. So, yeah, by the time everything had changed and it was really in full swing was the middle of 2017.
At what point did you decide I need to move to the US and go through all this? Do you remember when that moment happened?
Yeah, it was the summer of 2016. So I was living in Brooklyn. It was just a feeling, really. It was just an intuitive feeling that I knew I needed to be where the action was, I guess. I could tell how much it brought the best out in me. It brought out confidence. It brought out, I mean, I'm never without self-doubt, unfortunately, but it brought out a little bit more self-belief. It brought out inspiration, and it brought out a community and network of people that I didn't have in Australia in the music world.
Tell us a little bit more about that feeling, like that motivation, because that's a huge thing to do. You're taking a massive risk in your life. You don't really have the money to do it. You don't have any security of employment or anything else. So that's all connected. That must be a very strong feeling that you've had to want to make that step to the other side of the world.
Well, I think that's exactly it. Like, I didn't have anything to lose. What was the worst was going to happen? I moved back to Adelaide and keep doing my hospitality job. Like, nothing would have changed except I would have tried and maybe come back with a bit of debt. Like, a bit of naivety goes a really long way in a really positive way. Sometimes I wish I could throw away some of my knowledge now to get back that real hungry blindedness of passion or ambition for just making something work, and you don't even know what that something is yet. But again, yeah, I had nothing to lose. So I think that's sort of where just that throw everything at the wall, see if it sticks sort of mentality came from.
By middle of 2016, you're managing FKJ and he's a busy guy with lots of happening, you know, always. Tell us about the next couple of years, or, you know, how it looks for you from there on in your journey out here to the United States.
Yeah, it was a lot of just heavy, heavy touring. So I really learned how to build a show, how to build a team in the live world that's come in really handy over the years into to where we are now with a very well-oiled machine in his live aspect of his career. But you know, I had to learn how to be a manager outside of the live world as well, you know, sort of learning everything that comes with it, which is what I really love about management, is you get to explore every aspect of the industry instead of sort of being stuck in one particular place. So I just sort of put my head down and did exactly that, learned how the rest of the industry works and how it all works as a cohesive machine.
And at some point you decide to move from coast to coast here in the US. You go from New York to LA. Yeah. What was behind that move?
I didn't realize how much I need to see a horizon and nature. It was much more of a mental health move for me. I thought I was this big city gal, but turns out I am not. And I need, you know, I need some space, both mentally and physically. I need space. So LA just seemed, I didn't know anyone. I knew two people here and did the move, but I knew it needed to happen. I was feeling quite suffocated in New York just by default of what that city is like. It's incredible, and I'm glad I did it in my 20s, but 2.5 years was long enough for me.
If you were to go back to the hospitality worker in Adelaide in, you know, 2015 or 16, that time period when you were just really starting this musical journey to the United States, is there anything that you would tell yourself that you didn't know then?
I think to enjoy it. To enjoy working with not so much pressure, working with your hands, working with your body, working with teams, and maybe be a little bit more astute as to just how many skills you're learning in something that is maybe sometimes a bit seen as a bit of a throwaway career, but it built me as a person. And now I'm a lot of skills that I learned in the hospitality world, I've brought over to the music world. So for anyone that is currently stuck in some hospitality job that they don't think is getting them anywhere, I really think there is a lot of skills to value.
Absolutely. Especially management, where you've got to pretty much be across everything.
Exactly.
So
exactly. Yeah. People, like how to speak to people, how to be able to read people, customers, staff, budgets, cashing up at the end of the night. You know, there's a lot of crossover.
Absolutely. Well, it's an incredible story and it's far from told. You know, I think we've got you quite early in your path in this, wherever it leads. So thank you so much for sharing it so far, and always a pleasure to talk to you, and all the best in the future.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
So that was Kate Cuthbertson. We're talking to her here in Los Angeles for the Cockatoos newsletter, where we explore musical journeys from Australia to the United States. The Cockatoo is the Australian Music Alliance, which is part of the Pitchhiker Foundation. We are a 501c3 nonprofit, so you can always support what we do by donating or following or subscribing to our newsletter. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you on the next edition.